this is Brett White, and welcome to Being Leaders, a podcast exploring the mistakes, the challenges, and the stuff-ups that have helped shape our leadership journeys. I will be joined by successful, honest, and amazing leaders from around the world talking about their fears, their failures, and their freakouts. You will be inspired, encouraged, and even a little surprised by the lessons, insights, and learnings that these incredible people share. So thanks for joining us, and enjoy today's Being Leaders conversation. I'm super excited to have as our special guest today, John O'Sullivan, all the way from the US. John is an internationally known TEDx speaker and the founder of the Changing the Game project, which he started in 2012. He's a regular great guy, a dad, a husband, and an incredible leader. He's also the author of two best-selling books, Changing the Game and Every Moment Matters. He's the host of the Way of Champions podcast, which is one of the top-rated podcasts in the world for coaches. He's consulted with the US Olympic team, the committee, US soccer, USA football, US lacrosse, Ireland rugby, Aussie rules football, and many, many more. You are going to learn a lot from this amazing, wonderful conversation with a great friend, a great leader, and a great guy, John O'Sullivan. Welcome everybody to the Being Leaders podcast, and it's really exciting for me today to have friend of mine, John O'Sullivan, all the way from the USA, joining us. Welcome, John.
Well, thanks, Brad. Great to be on, man. Great to see your face again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. I've had the privilege of buying you a beer in Sydney when you were here a few years ago. And I've been an avid follower of your work, listened to your Way of the Champion podcast, read your books, and you've been an inspiration to me. And the work that you do for me is absolutely incredible and inspiring and definitely needed in our world today.
Well, cheers. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the work that you do and people like yourself and, you know, in the grassroots level of sport, not only, you know, sport for kids locally, but sport for social impact around the world. And, just, you know, doing good work. So it's great to be here and chat about my journey a little bit with you.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, you read sort of through your bio and, you know, the TEDx talks and best-selling books and running conferences and obviously the founder of Change the Game project. What's kind of been, you know, a highlight for you in that kind of nearly 10 years, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been that long. And, you know, people always ask me, you know, what's your 6-month plan or what's your plan? And I said, you know, if I have ever in any part of this journey answered that question, I would have been wrong. Right. Like, so that entrepreneurial journey. And I think I've been very lucky that I keep my eyes open. Right. So when I wrote my first book, I was really like, hey, let me help parents in sport. Right. Because I was a parent of young kids at that time, but I'd been around sport and coaching and felt like a lot of parents in the US just didn't have the access or it wasn't easy to find the right information.
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, I went through that side of things and then said, well, wait a sec. Like I go to these schools or clubs and I'm talking to parents, but I mean, I've coached forever. Why don't I work with the coaches, right? And so and I started doing more with the coaches and the podcast and a book for coaches and a lot of online courses and stuff. So it's just been this amazing thing. But for me, I've been so blessed that I've been able to meet some of the greatest coaches in the world, greatest sports scientists, the greatest, some unbelievable athletes and just explore their journey to mastery, their journey to getting better at their craft. And, you know, the one thing for me that just blows my mind is just there's sort of like this level of ego below the top that provides a ceiling for people and prevents them from getting better. They get to this point where they think they know it all, or their ego doesn't allow them to admit that they don't, and they stop getting better. But when I talk to a Steve Kerr of the world or an Anson Dorrance who's won a World Cup or these national championship or these Olympic coaches at the top, they are humble and they are lifelong learners.
Yeah, wow.
And so for me, that's probably the greatest gift that I've gotten from this, is this sort of reinforcement of never stop learning and bring, you know, as they say in martial arts, you know, the white belt mentality to every conversation you have.
Yeah.
And then to just meet people who are at the absolute pinnacle of their profession who do the same thing. It's just really reassuring.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think, you know, that at that elite athlete level, one of the challenges obviously is, you know, how does an elite athlete deal with failure or a setback or challenges, and that kind of resilience I sort of see in young people today is something that really needs to be, I guess, developed at a higher level. You know, this whole podcast is around, you know, what are the lessons and learnings that we can share, I guess, from a leadership perspective around, you know, our own kind of fears and failures, mistakes and stuff ups. And, you know, you've been extraordinarily successful, but I'm sure in that journey, you know, like an elite athlete, you've had some mistakes or some failures or some fears along the way. What might be some of that story that you would be able to share to us today?
I mean, I think every day is filled with small failures, right? Hopefully small failures that, you know, can be overcome. I mean, I could list so many in my relationship with my wife or my relationship with my own children who are, you know, teenagers now. And, you know, the times where my emotions got the best of me in the car ride or something like that. And next thing I turn over and my kid's in tears in the car. And I'm like, what, how stupid can I be? Like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, breaks my heart on a small level. You know, I think a lot of what I do, my journey as a coach was driven by the fact that, you know, as an athlete, I was lucky enough to, you know, get a sniff of professional soccer and play for a bit, but injuries kind of ended that for me early. And I didn't go out on my own terms. And so I think that failure to make it maybe as high a level as I could as an athlete, you know, and it's funny because in the moment you're like, well, I'll retire and I'll go coach and do this and I'll be fine. But, you know, I always tell people now who are on that journey, like, play as long as you can, because you can't go back.
Yeah.
Right. You can't go back. And so take advantage of that, because you can't take 3 years off and then go, oh yeah, you know, I think I'll be a pro athlete again, you know? So I have that. I mean, you know, I mean, one of my greatest disappointments, honestly, I was coaching, you know, university level soccer, and I applied for the head coaching job at my alma mater in New York City. And I got down to, you know, the final two and in for an interview and didn't get the job. And I didn't interview well. And I was devastated, because that was my dream and that was my path. And I want to be a NCAA Division I coach and all that. But when that door closed, other doors opened, right? And and it allowed me to focus on my relationship with my now wife, then girlfriend. it allowed me to, you know, go down this path of coaching youth, which is just been an amazing path, you know? And so I've had injuries, I've had, you know, lost jobs, I've had disappointments. And my brother said something to me yesterday, which was really stuck with me. There's the American pilot, Chuck Yeager. I don't know if you know of him. And I think he was the first pilot to ever break the sound barrier in a plane.
Okay.
And he said, it's always bumpiest in the cockpit right before you break the sound barrier.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And I just thought about that a lot yesterday and today, and some things going on in my own life of like that's it right there. It's always the worst before your biggest breakthrough.
Yeah. And a lot of the time it's when it gets to that bumpy stage that people either give up or walk away without actually hanging in there to get, you know, that the feeling of what's beyond, you know, the bumpy cockpit. I see a lot of young people particularly that sort of, when the ride gets rocky, is they walk away or they give up or they don't feel they have what it takes.
I think we do a disservice to children when we don't share that story. with them, right? When we try to pretend that it's easier or perfect, because again, that's Gen X, is this like, if I want something, the answer is at my fingertips, information, right? Hold my attention or I can move on to something else, right? Instagram, no good. I'll jump on Twitter, whatever it is, right? And it's like, but no, but good things happen by showing up every day and doing the work and putting in the time. And I feel like, I just feel like we can do a better job of adults of helping our kids realize that, and helping each other realize that too, because I interact all the time with people who have big dreams. And this is why I always say to people, Brett, like, that's why, if you can, do what you're passionate about, right? Because at least if you're passionate about it, it doesn't feel like work in those bumpy times. It's like, yeah, this is me, right? Mm. But like for me, if I was dealing with awful, rocky, bumpy times, you know, and no disrespect to anyone who, you know, has a landscaping business, right? That just doesn't excite me, right? But if I did that and I was miserable and failing, I'd be like, well, I don't even want to do this anyway.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like when you do things that you love, you're like, okay, well, great. I'll do that. I'll keep, it's worth the suffering in this moment, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my sort of, I guess, own journey, and then looking around, you know, to other people, success is really not achievable without the failures, right? I mean, the failures, I sort of feel, are the things that actually shape us and, you know, create resilience and help problem solve and help us, you know, deal with ourselves and understand people. And, you know, they're kind of like often the stepping stones to success are the setbacks and the failures and the mistakes. And yet, you know, most people try and avoid them at all costs. What's your kind of take on that kind of, I mean, you talked about the daily failures that, you know, the way I spoke to my kids or the way I spoke to my wife, and all those kind of little things that happen on a daily level. But then obviously there are bigger, you know, things that we fear, the fear of failure and mistakes that we might make, you know, as a leader or leading people or leading an organization. And even those things, I think, are absolutely critical to our journey to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, what would be your kind of input to those people that, you know, are really striving and wanting to be successful, successful in leadership, successful in sport, around the way that we embrace failure?
I mean, I think it's the most important thing. That, you know, I heard this great story. Paul McGinley, the European golfer, Irish golfer, was talking about being a young golfer on the pro tour, his first year, and he got to go have dinner with Jack Nicklaus, you know, at the time, maybe still the greatest golfer of all time, right? And so Jack Nicklaus pulled him aside after and said, you're beginning your career, let me give you a piece of advice. He goes, I'm the best player who's ever played the game, and I lost 90% of the time.
Wow.
So you want to be a pro golfer, you better learn how to lose.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a fascinating way to approach things, because if you want to be good at anything, you better learn how to lose. All right. Yeah. And to not be overwhelmed by it or emotionally destroyed by it, but to be able to analytically look at it and say, what did I learn from this, so that I don't make the same mistake again.
Yeah.
And any business person will tell you that's, you know, it's not a smooth ride to the top. And I mean, so many of our greatest companies have stories of, you know, it, within 24 hours, you might have never heard of us, but here we are today. Right. Yeah, and so I think that's it. And the advice that we always give to parents and at schools and stuff is that, you know, when it comes to raising your children in sports or otherwise, your job isn't to prepare the path for the child. It's to prepare the child for the path.
Yeah, right.
Right. And when you try to prepare the path and get rid of all those failures and difficulties and everything, you might have the clout and the money for a while for it to work, but sometime in life, you won't be there. But if you prepare the child for the path and look at those difficult moments and say, How do we learn? How are we going to fix this? How are we whatever? Then throughout his or her life, they're ready for whatever is thrown in their way.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's really good. Preparing, and not, I guess, not just the child. I mean, you know, even in your leading adults, as a leader, I think that's a great kind of principle, you know, to preparing them for what's ahead. I think is, yeah, it's a great principle to adopt. What about you personally? What have been, you know, some of your sort of learnings or, you know, lessons from, you know, some of the mistakes or failures or even fears that you've had to sort of overcome, you know, in your kind of journey of life and leadership?
You know, I think a lot of people in the world, and me as well, sort of have moments in your life where you struggle with, I would call, significance, or this idea of like, who am I to be this messenger, right?
Yeah.
I remember sitting there on the stage about to give a TED talk going, who the hell am I to give a TED talk, right?
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, some of the level of clients that I've gotten to work with through Changing the Game project of sports that I know nothing about, but the highest level of that sport in the United States or in Australia or Asia or Europe to say, we want you to talk to our coaches about getting better. And I'll sit in there, like, it feel like imposter syndrome sometimes, really, like me. Right. And so that's one of, I would say, like a fear for me of like, well, what if, you know, what if they find me out? Right.
Yeah.
Because I didn't play in a World Cup, or I didn't, you know, coach a national team or a pro team. So that's part of it. And then, I mean, I think just, you know, the most important thing to me in my life is to be a good dad. Yeah. Right. And a good spouse and raise like good kids who are good people. And I think, you know, they're autonomous human beings and they get to make their own decisions, good and bad. Yeah. Right. And it's like, it's always scary to me to just be like, they're going to have to screw up once in a while, you know? And I got to make sure that I build this relationship, so when the screw up's there, at least they'll come to me in their time of need or whatever too. So, I mean, those are the things that are far more scary to me than a lot of other things, you know, and, you know, I'm lucky that whatever, I'm not worried about if I lose my job tomorrow, or I lose my house or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, I think they talk about, you know, the three universal fears being the fear of not being enough, the fear of not being loved, and the fear of being found out. And I think like all of those play out at some level, I think, in our lives, in our journeys, as we do become successful, there's that, you know, as you were talking about before, that kind of, you know, what if they find out I'm actually not as good as they think I am, or you know, I haven't done, tick these boxes, and that kind of self-doubt. What are some of the strategies that you use to kind of overcome some of those things so that you can keep doing what you're doing and be successful? I mean, even as a parent, you know, we're not perfect, are we? And we will make mistakes in our parenting. What would be some of your personal strategies in kind of working through or overcoming that fear in the moment to keep doing what you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, on a personal level, it's, you know, taking care of yourself, exercising is always a good thing for me. That helps me sleep better and feel better and things like that. Eating well, meditation, stuff like that. You know, on a professional level, you know, it's very, you know, I think we're programmed as human beings to focus on the negative, right?
Yeah.
That's our lizard brain or whatever. And so you get 99 compliments and one person says your book sucks. And I'm like, oh my God, how can I change his mind?
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. Yeah.
And so I think I've learned to ignore, right? Like, you know, there's a writer, Seth Godin. He said, you don't learn anything from your one-star reviews, right? You can learn a lot from a three-star review.
Yeah.
Right. That's someone who took some time to thoughtfully say what was good and what was not good about this. But the person who just says you suck and you're an idiot, like, you don't learn anything from that person, nor do you necessarily learn anything from the person who says you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. So seeking out those people in the middle, seeking out honest feedback. I mean, I think we all need coaches, right? We all need mentors. And so I have people in my life that I can say, please give me some honest feedback on this. Did I come off too strong, or how was it? Right. Or hell, I do a talk and film it and watch it and be like, oh my God, what was that? You know? I mean, it was funny when my last book, I was recording the audiobook version of it and I'm in the studio reading it. I'm like, who the hell wrote this? This is an awful sentence, you know?
Yeah, it's classic. When I was doing my coaching course with the Coaching Institute in Melbourne, one of the little sayings that they used to throw around all the time that I've kind of adopted, I think, personally, is, you know, there's no such thing as failure, only feedback. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not failure. It's actually just giving you feedback to actually then help you grow and improve and become better. But you talked then about the need, I think, as a leader to actually invite feedback in. I find people are reluctant kind of to do that. You know, there is a fear of feedback, of someone actually telling me that I could do better. What's been your experience around, you know, I think as, you know, as a leader or as a coach, of giving that kind of feedback and creating a culture where feedback is positive and the norm.
I mean, and there's an art to giving feedback well, right? Sure. That it doesn't come across as an attacking, but hey, this is a partnership to try to make you better. You know, it's funny because I'll do work with coaches one-on-one evaluating their coaching sessions or something like that. And I'll pull the team in at the end. And sometimes I'll just say, hey, everyone, like, you know, how was practice? Right. And then their program says, oh, it was good. I'm like, no, like on a scale of 10, 10 is the best practice that you could have ever had. And one was like, this was the worst. And I know it's not a one. So where was that? Right. 7, 8. Oh, great. What would have made your 8 a 9?
Yeah. It's
good. Like what would have made it that? And then they go, oh, well, if we scrimmaged more at the end, or if we had done this, I'm like, okay, great. And then I'll meet with a coach and be like, was that helpful? Right. Because that's good, honest child feedback.
Yeah.
Right. Of how can I make this better? And then I think in feedback, you have to give people objective things, not just subjective things. Mm-hmm. Right. So if I'm giving a coach feedback and I was evaluating your session, one of the things that I would do at your session is every time the ball wasn't rolling because you were talking or explaining or whatever, I would start my stopwatch. Yeah. And at the end of your session, I would say, all right, Brett, you had 90 minutes with your team. You know, how much of that time do you think your team was actually playing, or how much of that time do you think you were talking to them and giving them water breaks and whatever? And oftentimes the first time I work with a coach, the answer in that 90 minutes is about 50 that they're not active.
Wow.
Right. It's a huge number. Yeah, right. Okay. And that happened to me too. So it's not like I was like perfect. And I say, wow, like imagine if you could take 50 and turn it into 30, you'd get 40 extra minutes of practice a week.
Yeah.
You'd start getting better a lot quicker, wouldn't you? So where can we objectively strip away, right? How do we make a water break quicker? How do you make your explanations cleaner? Things like that. And then I go out a month later and it's like, boom, the practice is moving. Kids are working harder. I'm like, uh-huh, there you go.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You just did what used to be a practice and a half in one practice, right? So my personality, Brett, sometimes I tend to be very blunt and direct because that's how I like feedback. And I think part of it's my personality and part of it's that I grew up in New York. And so don't beat around the bush. And then I live on the West Coast where everyone is a little more like, hey, it's cool, like whatever. And so sometimes I have to be very more self-aware of how I'm giving people feedback who don't necessarily take it the way that I take it.
Yeah. What would be kind of something that you would love to sort of pass on to say, young emerging leaders or coaches out there around the whole concept of, failures and feedback, making mistakes, fears. What would you, love to kind of encourage younger leaders and coaches to kind of grab hold of in that concept?
I think of two things. Number one, this is what I say to my own children in the car after a game.
Yeah.
Whether the game was the best they ever played or they just had a nightmare, right? And they say, Dad, how did I do? Right. When they ask that question, my daughter asked it in the car. My son will ask it later that night. Right. And I always say, well, what went well? Right. And what needs work? Right. And what can we work on this week to yep. be better?
Yep.
Right. And sort of that, like, I think as a leader helping someone on your sales team or whatever, like, okay, well, let's learn from this. What went well about it? What was good about the presentation and what needs work and what can we learn so that next time they say yes instead of no, right? Good. So I think that sort of planned approach to difficult conversations is really important. And then number two, I think having made a big life shift in my career, right, from going down a full-time coaching path to saying, no, I'm going to stop. I want to be a speaker. I want to write books. I want to do that. There's this scary moment when you've reached a certain level, right? And now you're jumping off that diving board. And now you're down here. And it can be really frustrating and scary and you want to go back.
Yeah.
But what I learned is that everything you learn to get to here in career one is going to help you in career two, but you're still going to need 12 to 18 months to get back to where you were. And then you're going to take off.
Yeah. Right.
And so I was told that when I started Changing the Game Project, and I kept that in the back of my head all the days when the phone didn't ring or when the only one who liked my Facebook post was my mom, right? Or things like that, right? Yep, but I kept that advice in the back of my head to say, okay, like whatever. And I mean, I have one of my best friends says now, he goes, I remember we were on a mountain bike ride and you said 3 more months and if this isn't working, I'm out. And he's like, and next thing you know, you're giving a TED talk, right? And next thing you know, you're flying around the world. And so I would say to any leader who's jumping off the cliff and trying something new, even if you feel like you're at the bottom, you still have all that life experience that's going to make your second career get you back to the top faster than the first go around.
Yeah, it's great advice. And I think sometimes when people are thinking about that kind of jump, they can feel a bit stuck, they can feel a bit unsure, there's that, uncertainty, self-doubt, the fear of what if this doesn't work. It's good to have friends and mentors around you just to give you a bit of a push off the edge when you need it.
And also give you good advice when it's not working of like, maybe it won't work, because that's one of the art as well, is like to not be so stubborn that you're like, keep pushing something that's never going to work. Right. Sometimes resilience isn't a good thing and you need to shut it down and try something else. I remember listening to an interview with, I think it's Mark Andreessen, the guy who founded Netflix.
Yeah.
And they made a decision in their business at a time when 94% of Netflix's revenue was DVD rentals.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And 6% was online streaming, and they decided to go all in on online streaming.
Yeah, wow.
Right? Because they said, we'll never compete with Amazon in the selling DVD business, right? But we can be the best at this one, And it's like, so he had people around him to say, yep, that's the thing, and that he trusted and whatever, because sometimes the best decisions are not always apparent.
No, and you'll get a lot of people that will speak, you're an idiot, you shouldn't do that, you're going to lose all this money. And that, I guess, can feed into our own questioning and self-doubt, which can be a good thing as we process the decision, but to make sure that you've got some of those people in your ring who, you know, are prepared to give you that.
Well,
advice.
I think if you're a leader, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're someone who, you know, and this is interesting, like growing up, my parents both own their own businesses.
Yeah.
So they never came home and complained about their boss. And so it was instilled in me in a young age of like, you know, if you have a problem, solve your problem. Don't blame someone else. And, you know, lo and behold, my brother and my sister and I all own our own businesses. Yeah, right. Wow. So, yeah. But I think, you know, there's be cognizant who you get advice from, right? When you're an entrepreneur and figuring this out, don't get your advice from the person with the pension and the golden handcuffs job that, you know, is so good that they'll never take a risk.
Yeah, that's not
the person you need to get advice from.
No, that's right. Just a couple of little quick questions. I mean, you've probably read thousands of books. What's one of those kind of must read books that you could recommend for kind of emerging leaders around the world?
Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. Is an incredible, powerful book about finding your why. For sure. I think an amazing book that it's funny, I had given away my copy and hadn't read it in a while. And I just ordered and got in the mail again a couple of days ago. It was The Inner Game of Tennis by Tim Galway.
Okay.
Love this book. And and it's just about the inner game. It's not just tennis, right? This is the inner game of life. Those are two right there that kind of pop into my head of like, you know, they'd be the books that I've gifted the most. How about that?
Yeah, cool. And what's something you want to be known for? What does John O'Sullivan want to be known for to the world out there?
I mean, if I'm completely honest, like, you know, world's greatest fly fisherman, but I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, fair enough.
I know there's not enough time out there for me to do that. But if you ask me, like, where would I like to spend all my days doing?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't like legacy for me or something is really what other people think of you, you know, and it's more important that I can look in the mirror and feel like I gave my best effort or, you know, I acted with integrity and things like that. And if I can do that, then, you know, the people who don't have the information, how could they know? And why would their opinion matter? I mean, we're living in a world right now where we're overvaluing others' opinions because of social media.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I just have to be able to look myself in the mirror and look my kids in the eye and look my wife in the eye and, you know, my family, like for me, I mean, that's it, right? Like earn the respect of the people that you respect and forget about everyone else.
Yeah. Good. It's great. Some good words of wisdom there for sure. Thanks so much for your time. That's kind of like our time is up. So much gold and valuable sort of information, ideas, insights, particularly I think for leaders, young leaders, people that are starting the journey or thinking about it to grab hold of. So thanks heaps for your time. What might be your closing thought? You know, if this was your final thought that the world would ever hear from John O'Sullivan, what would it be?
I'll need more time to prepare. that might be it. You know, for me, just sort of like, you know, do your best. Just do your best, right? That's all that. I don't like the word try, right? Try is not a great word for me. Like either do or don't do. But when you commit to do, like just, you know, give it your very best. And if it doesn't work out, then like we talked about, learn, try again tomorrow. That's it.
And that kind of lines up with that whole, you can look yourself in the mirror and go, I did my best.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, that's an important part of that journey for leadership as well. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate you personally. I've been you know, a great inspiration and encouragement to me personally. Appreciate you making the time to chat to Brett in Sydney, Australia, from the US, and being a part of the Being Leaders podcast. So thanks so much for being here. As I said, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett. This was a great conversation. I loved it.
Thank you.